This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Straight up 6 o'clock. I'm not to the point yet where I'm tired of football. Anybody else? I still
Gosh,
like
no.
it.
No, you kidding me?
So much so I sat down and watched South Alabama and Troy last night.
Well, I didn't watch that whole game.
Troy wins it 37-13. I'll tell you this. And Rockstar has actually been to the games there.
Electric.
No, seriously, Rockstar. I watch these Tuesday, and all these guys do too. I watch these Tuesday night, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday games from these other leagues, and Troy creates a good atmosphere down there, relatively speaking. You know, they do I don't know if it was special last night because we're so close to Halloween or because they knew the ESPN cameras were there and they had a special atmosphere. Our ESPN just played up everything going on better than they do at other stadiums, but the sumo wrestling and the Hamburglar and all that walking around, and the students were engaged, the worst kick in between a timeout I've ever seen in my life, all that around the football. I thought the stadium is sort of a cool little stadium.
It is.
I thought it was a good show.
I don't have a lot to compare it to because I don't go to a lot of football games, but nothing is worse than when they have the little girl on the field in between a timeout to do like a trivia question with a guy and the mic doesn't work.
And they have them on the big board
and they have the A, B, or C on the big board, and she just see her like with her hands up. I can't.
Now, part of it's what we do for a living, but I don't know about you guys, but any time like they throw it down to the sideline person and they have mic issues,
it's so uncomfortable, my
skin crawls. Does that bother you guys as much as it bothers me? It's like watching a comedian.
That's not funny.
Well, Dunaway, since you do it, how long do you get if you throw to Lance and Lance is obviously, it's been 15 seconds yet, and he said, how long do you wait to say, like, okay, we're obviously having problems.
Oh, it's not 15 seconds.
I know that, but like,
it seems like 15 seconds, but even like 5-6 seconds, you're...
It's an eternity.
Yeah, you're already saying, we apparently don't have Lance. Because modern technology, we have to wait now for at least a second and a half because of the delays built into, you know, not necessarily using satellite trucks anymore, using a cell service, but the technology problems bother me. But I didn't see any of that last night at Troy. I thought it was a great atmosphere. Troy wins the game 37-13. Chip Lindsey's down there. And I just thought Troy put on a good show last night. That being said, we got more football tonight. And one of them is very interesting. UCLA and Stanford. I don't know about you guys and David Shaw. It seems like he has become stale there in Palo Alto. And then I take a step back, Lance, and I say to myself, this guy's dealing with, you know, I know injuries are part of the game, but he's dealing with a lot of injuries. And word comes out last night, he's playing tonight with his starting quarterback being QB3 Jack West. I mean, it's hard to win when you're down to your third quarterback or your fourth quarterback or your sixth tight end or all the injuries they've had. Are we being too hard on David Shaw this year?
You know, possibly. Coming into the season, I expected a lot because I thought KJ Costello was finally that quarterback that had a lot of experience. And, you know, you don't have some of the explosive players you've had in the past, especially in the backfield when you look at McCaffrey and then Bryce Love. And Arcega Whiteside was a big loss at the wide receiver position. Costello went down week one against Northwestern. When Davis Mills came in, he looked terrific, but the last two starts, Davis Mills has been very effective. And Stanford, I don't want to say they've gotten back in the Pac-12 race. I mean, but they're sitting in second place right now, tied with Washington at 2-2 in conference. But now when you're down to a third-string quarterback in Jack West, I mean, this is a major problem. I mean, the good news is you're hosting a UCLA team that David Shaw has never lost to.
Wow, that's a pretty good record.
Always times for first times, Brown.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Stanford, look, I'm with Lance. I'm not going to say they're back in the race because they have already lost to Oregon, who's got a two-game lead on them. So they're going to need really big-time chaos. They're going to need Oregon to lose to Washington Saturday, for one. But without this win, there's no hope. I don't know that we can sell this game to the general public here. This is a bad football game.
No, I mean, and Stanford, to me, best case is a 7-5 team right
now. Yeah, and I do think it's gotten stale with David Shaw.
Well, that was my question away from the football game itself, was David Shaw, are we being too hard on him this season?
So here's what I think happened, though. I think Jim Harbaugh changed your expectations for that program is David Shaw's problem. And, I mean, you got to remember how horrible that program was before Harbaugh got there. And Harbaugh is an easy target now because he has underachieved at Michigan. But what he did at Stanford was near miraculous.
Yeah, but David Shaw has done almost as well or better when you start to look at the numbers.
But he took it over after it was built, though, Lance, was my problem. And Harbaugh, or not my problem, but my point, and Harbaugh had set a bar, and Shaw now is not living up to that bar.
I think we do expect too much out of this Stanford program.
And that's
program.
What I'm saying. Maybe we do.
Because you look in his 8 years, 8+ years now, he's won double digits 5 times.
He has, but they're all front loaded. His last three have been 9-5, 9-4, and as you say, he looks like he's headed towards a 7-5 this year.
What you're saying is we used to put Duke, Vandy, Northwestern, and Stanford into that category of, okay, they're playing in major conferences, but they are really academic. Yeah.
Academic restrictions are a little too much, and it's going to be difficult for Stanford to be able to play with some of these other programs in this conference.
And then all of a sudden, Stanford's a national championship contender, and we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, when they're going to Rose Bowls, you know, every year it seemed like. I remember they had gone 3 or 4 years, and the 1 year they didn't go, they went to a Fiesta Bowl. But now they're probably going to drop back to a 7-5. If they drop to a 7-5, this will be his worst year. And so that's a bad look. But again, if you get somebody else in at Stanford, you know, what's the expectation really?
Well, between Ty Willingham and Jim Harbaugh, Buddy Tevens was their head coach. Remember Buddy Tevens, right?
And give me a Walt Harris in there.
Harris, he had 2 years. So they were 2-9, 4-7, 4-7, 5-6, 1-11. That's what Harbaugh took over.
Yeah. There was a time they went back and forth with Bill Walsh and Dennis Green on. I'm bringing them back for retreads, right?
Yeah.
Did they each have 2 runs there?
I don't know about Denny Green, Jim.
He didn't come back more time?
Walsh, you know, his first time was 17-7. His second time was 17-17.
Yeah.
So he had 17 wins both times.
It was
Denny Green
good.
Was 16-18.
I think Bill Walsh got a lot of accolades because of John Elway, right?
Yeah, his
and
college
John Elway
time
team
good.
Was like 7-5, weren't they?
8-3, I think it was.
Yeah, they don't have a real good. I mean, they don't have a good history, and that's what I'm saying. Maybe I mean, look, if you look at what David Shaw has done in comparison to the rest of the history of Stanford football, he's the best modern day coach they've ever had.
Well, I think
maybe the best coach they've ever had.
One of the bigger problems for Stanford is when we looked at Stanford when they were having productive years and they were going 10-2 or 11-1, we said, you know what, that's the West Coast version of the SEC.
Yes.
And they can do it with physicality, and you see these big offensive and defensive lines.
Extra tight end.
Yeah, and it's almost like as the game evolves, Stanford hasn't evolved.
And yeah,
they don't
I agree.
Have the best athletes. You know, Christian McCaffrey could mask a lot of that because he would single-handedly take a game over. Bryce Love 2 years ago was doing the same thing. You don't have that special player. And even though you've got solid quarterback play when Costello is healthy, you just it's just a different game.
I mean,
now.
He at 82 wins, he's the winningest coach in school history, if that puts it into perspective. The guy that is number two is Pop Warner. 71 wins. So, I mean, we're talking about he's the best coach in Stanford history. So maybe we are being too difficult on David Shaw. Maybe I owe him an apology.
I think David Shaw is an easy guy to dislike. He doesn't look like he's having much fun, and he always looks like he's smelling something bad.
He really does. Yeah. But I've always thought that's what makes him a good NFL coach. I mean, I really think the guy would be a very good NFL coach.
He's not emotional, is your point.
Right. I mean, those NFL coaches all look miserable, every one of them. Not one of them looks like they're enjoying their job.
There's not a lot of rah-rah guys in the NFL.
No. I mean, they all look like they're fearful the next play call gets them fired, every single one of them.
No, you're right. I mean, David
even Bill
Shaw
Belichick
is even kill. Call goes against him. Quarterback blows a knee. His own team scores 86-yard touchdown. I mean, he's got a poker face.
Yeah. He does.
Pete Carroll may be the most emotional rah-rah guy on the sideline.
He's about the only one that ever looks like he's having fun in the NFL. All the rest of them look miserable. Even Belichick.
And how about Pete Carroll may have the best team in the league this year?
No.
Lance disagrees.
Maybe the best player in the league. Maybe the MVP, but that offensive line has still got a lot of work to do. Look, I think they're really good, but I don't think they're the best team in the league. But ultimately, they could be.
Ultimately, they could be. Chiefs and Broncos tonight. Thursday night football as well. 7:20 on Fox for the NFL tonight as they return. And the best game, whether it's the NFL, it won't be UCLA and Stanford. That may be an entertaining game. But the Sun Belt game tonight is a battle of two teams trying to get to the top of the West. Louisiana Lafayette, or Louisiana as they like to be called, against Arkansas State. So a nice night of football for you to kick back and enjoy that. I found myself last night with the baseball rainout. And because it was on main ESPN, and one of my TVs seemed to always be on ESPN, I watched a little exhibition NBA basketball for the second quarter. I didn't watch a lot of it, but I watched the second quarter. And the Lakers, at least through the one quarter I have watched for them, look like they will be interesting to watch this year with Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Well, you know, last night it was all about sharing the basketball, and Anthony Davis said it after the game. You know, I looked up and the numbers weren't there, but, you know, we're soundly beating this team. And I think when you look at the combination of Anthony Davis and you look at, obviously, LeBron James, and you throw in a veteran like Danny Green, and once Rondo comes back and he's really healthy, and Dwight Howard, I mean, this is an interesting team. They're favored right now to win the NBA championship, which is kind of amazing. But this is something we talked about in the offseason. The first time in a long time, we really don't know what's going to happen in the NBA. Unfortunately for me, with everything that's going on off the court, I'm having a hard time getting on board on these Lakers right now.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But they were there at Staples last night for the first time together, and it was an exhibition national television game. The season starts next Tuesday. David in Atala is next with us this morning on the Jocks Roundtable. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Thank you.
Did we just go through the history of Stanford football a while ago and not mention the Rose Bowl champions in the early 70s?
Stanford, yes.
Yeah, we did. Stanford. They won the Rose. Willingham took them to the Rose.
They've won the Rose a couple
Jim,
of times.
Yeah.
Jim Plunkett.
Yeah, 70 and 71. John Ralston was your head coach then.
Okay, and I don't remember whether they won the national championship. I don't think they did, but they prevented Ohio State from winning it.
By winning the Rose Bowl?
Yeah. And they did God's work then.
Yeah, there you go. And also, I'm not sure how many people that remember, and I know everybody now in sports has watched the famous Stanford band replay with the laterals and everything and all that.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of them remember that the reason Stanford was kicking off to Cal was because Elway had just completed one of those length-of-the-field last-minute drives to bring his team back into the league like we were about to see plenty of in the NFL a decade or so later.
Yeah, a team, by the way, that I think finished 5-6.
Yeah.
Which is baffling. No, it's baffling to me that you could have John Elway. I mean, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks we have ever seen, and you finish 5-6. I'd love to go back and see how that season unfolded.
Well, that was actually an improvement from what they had been a couple of years prior, and the Plunkett thing was an aberration. They were just good for the 2 or 3 years he was there.
Yeah.
Like, say, upset Ohio State in the early 70s, whatever Rose Bowl that was, and then never heard from again until the Elway teams, and that was, like you said, just Elway.
Yeah.
Right. David, thank you, man.
It's a good history lesson.
For the Stanford folks, for back in the early 70s, they're back on TV tonight, UCLA and Stanford, 8 o'clock on ESPN. That was a big topic of the celebration that our friend Ivan Mazel has put together for ESPN of the 150 years of college football. That this week's episode is on television and what it has done to the game of college football. And they were reliving that period in time back in the early 80s when they finally broke the restraints and allowed the CFA to come in, and you were able to broadcast more than what the NCAA dictated. And I forget how many people were against that. The NCAA had people lined up to testify in front of Congress about not allowing it to happen. And it sort of reminds me of Congress and the image thing going on now. But the Michigan athletic director, who they had on there, I can't remember his name, was just adamant that why would anybody want to be broadcast more than twice a year?
This is what
he said. He goes,
it's just idiotic in hindsight, isn't it?
Here was his thought, and at the time, it did not seem idiotic because he says, we make $700,000 off of television. We make $8 million off of ticket sales. Why would we want to be on television more than twice and hurt our gate? Back in the old days of sports, it was all about the gate, you know.
Yeah,
the gate.
That, but how much did you get as the visiting gate?
Yeah, well, you only got a cut, right?
Yeah. So my point would be, if I'm a Michigan fan, well, we've got the 8 home games. What about the 4 that my home fans can't see?
And my guess would be that was before revenue sharing in conferences. So the Michigan AD obviously was for that because he was selling out his stadium each week.
He didn't care about Indiana.
That's right. Yeah. But what a lack of vision by the Michigan AD. I mean, I understand that it made financial sense then, but now look at it and see what a bad lack of vision that was.
The great Eddie Robinson testified in front of Congress saying it would kill college football. And a lot of a lot of old school people believed that it would kill college football, and it did change.
It changed it for the better. Yeah. But that's why, Lance, I laugh at this image discussion that's going to kill college football, because it's just the latest thing. I mean, if you've lived long enough, you've seen enough of these things that were going to kill college football. And none of them have, by the way. It's a pretty powerful sport.
Well, I think you go back then and you talk about vision. It was such an exclusive sport. You think about how mainstream college football has become.
Yeah.
And you really can make the argument. I mean, it's not as big as the NBA nationally yet. But, I mean, behind the NFL, NBA, I mean, it's number three. Yeah.
But it's. I think it's the healthiest it's ever been, don't you?
Yeah, oh, yeah, and it continues to grow. Yeah.
And all we do, I mean, God, my gosh, you watched Troy and South Alabama last night. I mean, think about that for a second.
Would have never been on.
And as the South Alabama AD, didn't have a team.
As the Michigan AD back then, he was saying, why would we want to be on television more than once or twice? Three tops, nobody, it'd be insane to be on four times. Well, now everybody is broadcast. In the SEC, you're on every one of your games. No matter if you play, if you're Vandy playing UNLV, you're on a channel where everybody can see you. And what it did was it started to spread the wealth around and the talent. But they pointed out last night, Brown, it was the reason why realignment was happening. It happened and became at a very fast pace. It pointed out that Penn State, you know, they started showing clips of everybody moving and Penn State joining a conference. But the one thing that jumped out to me was 1991, and they showed Lou Holtz on the sidelines and everyone talking about how the CFA had freed up. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, yeah. So in 1988 we had the CFA, and all of a sudden everybody could be on television. And then all of a sudden Notre Dame has their own deal.
Yeah.
And we were like, wait a second, aren't they part of the CFA?
Nope, not anymore.
Yeah, they were. So,
yeah. And it, got some news for you boys.
All the reaction from all the administrators back then was like, well, this has caught us by surprise. We didn't know you could do this. We thought we were all one big group.
Yeah.
Well, Notre Dame wasn't, and they had that. And the reaction, Herb Street was one of the guys talking, and he said the reaction was that this was going to be an unfair advantage to Notre Dame.
Right.
And very quickly, they sold all the individual teams, sold their TV rights to their conferences. And the conferences were able to get a lot more money and get that exposure and basically negated Notre Dame's advantage of being on NBC.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame has had no advantage whatsoever from being on NBC.
Maybe it's hurt them even.
I don't know if it's hurt them. It may have. I'm not arguing with you, but I'm just saying I do remember that. I do remember the people like, oh, my gosh, Notre Dame's got this huge advantage over everyone. I mean, what's it done for them the last 25 years, really?
Well, I mean, at least you knew 10 years ago you were going to get every Notre Dame game if you were a Notre Dame fan. I know you get that from almost every big fan base now.
But it didn't make them a national power by any stretch.
But when I look at the games, you know, the one network I don't like really watching a game on is NBC.
It's NBC, yeah.
How often?
It doesn't feel like a college game.
Tell me this, though. I agree with you. How often, and we watch a lot of football, unless it's Notre Dame, Michigan, Notre Dame, USC, how often do you go across NBC just to look?
No, I probably have Notre Dame on 5 weekends a year.
But, like, I even sample even games I know I'm not going to watch a lot of. I'll still sample them, like ESPN2s and ESPNUs and Big Ten networks and SEC networks. I almost never just go over and sample Notre Dame unless it's a big game. I just don't even think about going to NBC to look at it.
Yeah, but to their credit, I mean, most of their games are at least appealing.
Yeah.
You mean their scheduling?
Yeah, I mean, their scheduling. They never have that complete dud. I mean, when you look at it this year, I mean,
Bowling Green this year.
Yeah, well, yeah, Bowling Green.
I mean, they're
going
to have some.
In New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to play those games. I'm not going to blame Notre Dame for playing those games. I'm just saying, even when it's like Notre Dame Boston College on NBC, I just, it's not in my, you know, hey, let's check ABC, let's check CBS, let's check ESPN, let's check NBC is way on down the list for me.
You know, I know we got to Notre Dame, but when you really start to look at the schedule, I mean, if they don't go 11-1, it's a disappointment.
Yeah, and, you know, their OC, Chip Long, is going to be one of those guys at the end of the year who ends up being in conversations for the next job, whether it's at Illinois, maybe Michigan State, maybe a Vandy, because he has roots here in the state of Alabama to get back to the SEC. So keep an eye on him. They're a good football team. Georgia losing last week did not help their resume for the college football playoffs, though.
Yet I still think they're going to find a loss.
Notre Dame?
Yeah.
What do you think it'll be?
I think
next week.
More likely, I think it's Michigan. I could see Michigan like lay an egg this week, lose by 14 to Penn State, then bounce back and beat Notre Dame.
I just don't think Michigan's very good. I think Notre Dame's a better team than them.
Well, I think Notre Dame's a better team, but I think it's pretty close.
Without a doubt, they have a better quarterback.
Who, Notre Dame? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't even think that's debatable. You know,
that's been one of the biggest shocking things over the last couple of years is where we saw Shea Patterson as kind of that raw freshman that seemed like he could do a lot of different things. And you thought once he actually got to Michigan that he was really going to be able to turn the corner.
It's been the exact opposite. Yeah.
All right, Pat Dye is standing by. I did want to give you a snippet from yesterday's SEC Media Days. Bruce Pearl, was, I guess, at the podium about 18 minutes and had gone 15 minutes talking about the Final Four, what the team was able to do last year, the expectations with almost a completely new roster this year. Some names you remember, but it'll be a reworked, retooled Auburn team picked to finish fourth in the league. But he does get asked the question about the NCAA, and is there any concern for him of another chapter, another hammer coming down for this program, or does he feel like that the worst of that whole FBI investigation is behind the Auburn program? Here's Bruce Pearl yesterday.
I always say that adversity reveals character way more than it builds it, and so I'd like to think that over the last couple of years, our character has been revealed. Because these have been some challenging times, so we've done a lot of things the right way in that situation, and we're not done yet. But I'm confident in the process. No, I'm very confident in the process.
Confident in the process was Bruce Pearl yesterday at SEC Media Days, where Kentucky's picked to win it. Florida is second, Auburn is fourth, Alabama is sixth. Scoobs is next with us on a cell phone. Hey, Scoobs, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning. How are you guys?
Great, man. Thank you.
A couple of questions for you guys. I listened to Three Man Front yesterday a little bit about the SEC moving to a 9-game schedule as far as interleague play. And I guess I'm just curious with you guys, how far do you think, my first question would be, how far do you think we are away from that? And all the other schools that are outliers that depend on that for their athletic programs, would it be a far conclusion to think that some of those athletic programs will be gone?
Is it, first of all, is it July already? Are we doing 9-game schedule topics?
I think you're a decent way away from it, because you got to remember a lot of these schools have done their out-of-conference schedules on big games, you know, the Texases, the Notre Dames, the Penn State games. And it's going to be difficult to work around those. So I, you know, maybe I'm uneducated on this, and that's probably the case. But I don't think you're particularly close, even if you voted on it now. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. When is the TV contract up? That sounds like something that would be part of a new TV deal.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I don't know when the CBS deal is up. That CBS deal, I think.
2023?
I wanted to say 2 to 3 years. Yeah.
That seems to be a good time to change things if you're going to change things is – to get more money, you say, hey, we'll go to 9 SEC games if it's going to happen.
All right, last question for you guys. How many games does Garrett have to lose to be gone? And if he loses this week to Philadelphia, how hot is his seat? And that's all I really got.
Jason Garrett of the Cowboys, the owner, Jerry Jones, has once again said why he thinks Jason Garrett's the perfect fit to be the Cowboys coach. It gets to being submissive to the owner. I mean, well, he's not a guy that stirs the pot a little bit.
He is a submissive guy, and we know that Jones is in control. And I do think they've got good communication. And the one thing I would say about this is Jason Garrett's had some good years. And to me, it's still a talented Cowboy team that's just not playing good football right now. I don't think by any means they can get back on track to win a championship. But Jerry Jones knows that his mortality, not only in the NFL, but right here on Earth, it's not long. And so he needs to win now as an owner. And I don't know what his best opportunity is, fellas. I do think if there were backdoor conversations to a guy like Lincoln Riley and he really believed he would take that job, if Jason Garrett didn't get back to the postseason, or even if he did get back to the postseason but didn't get deep in the postseason, I think Jerry Jones would make that move. But I think it's going to take the right guy that he knows he can get to make that move.
Is it fair to say, Brown, that in the NFL, we're college football fans, that in the NFL, you have to be used to losing more than you are in college football. So 3-3, there are different 3-3 teams out there, and the Cowboys are 3-3, and they could still do very well this year. Just because you have 3 losses in your first 6 games in the NFL doesn't mean your championship hopes are done.
Yeah, I can't remember who I was reading about. It might have been Christian Wilkins, and the fact that he had never lost as many games in his entire collegiate career as he's lost this year for the Dolphins. And that just shows you when guys like that get in the NFL and they start losing, it's a different world. You made the best point I've heard made, though, Jim, about Lincoln Riley and the Cowboys and why you don't fire Jason Garrett now if you want Lincoln Riley, if he is your guy. Well, I mean, you made the point. I was going to let you make it again, but if you want me to steal your point.
Please do it.
Have you forgotten what you said already?
No, I was reading.
Oh, okay.
Landrum was telling me why they were talking nine-game schedule yesterday.
Oh, yeah. So the point you made was if you want Lincoln Riley to be your coach, if that's who Jerry Jones wants, he does him zero favors by firing Garrett right now.
You got
to
wait.
Yeah, you hold on to Garrett until Lincoln Riley's work is done. Then you fire him so Lincoln Riley isn't constantly being asked the Cowboys question.
Yeah, nothing will make Lincoln Riley more mad and not want to be the Cowboys coach if you derail my job right now, making my next 3 months hell.
And I don't know. I mean, do you guys think, is it a slam dunk to you Lincoln Riley takes over and the Cowboys are?
No, not at all.
No. I mean, that's the same players.
I mean, do you believe they've got a quarterback that can win them a Super Bowl?
I mean, I think he's good enough. I mean, to me, Dak Prescott is right there with Jared Goff. And Jared Goff, to me, last year, they should have won a Super Bowl. Look, Sean McVay's lost 3 consecutive games for the first time in his tenure, in his 2+ years. I still think McVay is one of the top 2 or 3 coaches. I really believe that. It's just, it's kind of gotten away from him. And there's so many layers to reasons why. And look, this thing turns quickly. I don't know if you guys realize this, but I got a feeling Kansas City's going to lose tonight. And if they lose tonight, that's 3 consecutive losses. And now they're sitting at 4-3. And now they're in jeopardy of not going to the postseason. In the NFL, it closes quickly, unless you're the New England Patriots.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden, the Chiefs could have 3 losses. The Bears could have 3 losses after this weekend. They've only got 3 wins. There's a couple of teams you would almost have guaranteed in the playoffs. And the Cowboys could be right there with them with a win over the Eagles Sunday night on Sunday Night Football. Landrum says from 3-Man Front, while they were discussing 9 games yesterday was – is there a desire to have Alabama, Tennessee every year still? That's the, you know, that game is whether it's true or not, that one rivalry game is the poster child for the way the schedules are in the league, having a crossover opponent. Do you think that's fair that Alabama, Tennessee is the only reason we have a mandated crossover opponent every year?
You don't think it's Auburn, Georgia, too?
I think it's a combination of those two.
I think it's those two.
Yeah, okay.
Because those are really the only – give me the other crossover game that matters to you guys. LSU-Florida.
Has developed a rivalry.
It has. And, I had this written down last week, and I don't even know if I brought it up, so I don't know that we even got to it. But
it was a great point if you did.
Does that resonate with you guys as a rivalry, LSU and Florida? Or is it just, hey, here's a good game in the SEC to watch?
It's a good game in the SEC. Yeah. And look,
I'm kind of the same way.
Because what we do for a living, we realize that thing has been ongoing for a long time.
And but it's got some spice of late.
I think for your casual SEC fan that's not Georgia or Florida, I don't think they really realize this thing is built in.
Yeah, the crossovers don't matter outside of Alabama, Tennessee, and Auburn, Georgia. Those are the only two divisional crossovers that have any pop at all to them.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, and if Auburn fans would be willing to give up Georgia, as an Alabama fan, I'd give up Tennessee just for them to rotate them around. I don't need it every year.
I don't want that at all. I want that every year. I want Alabama. Look, guys, Tennessee's going to come back at some point.
No. I'm just saying that they would be on the schedule. What is the breakdown of the schedule?
Once every 8 years?
No. If we get rid of the crossover, what would it be?
I don't know.
I think they can rotate. If we go without the crossover, they can rotate. Everybody gets to play them every 4 years, so we'd get that game at least once every 4 years.
You would give up Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama, Tennessee to only get that game once every 4 years?
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think that's tough.
That's very short-sighted, I think.
Well, I don't take it personally, Brown. Don't get mad at me.
No, I'm not getting mad at you. I just can't believe you don't want to see Auburn, Georgia. You don't want to see that game every year?
I'm getting closer to Dunaway than I was before, though. Just because when you look at Tennessee, Alabama, I mean, it's 12 consecutive Alabama wins.
Yeah, but Tennessee's going to bounce back at some point, and this is going to be a rivalry again.
But if I give up Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama, Tennessee every year, I end up getting Alabama, Georgia more often. I end up getting Alabama, Florida more often. I end up getting Georgia and Tennessee more often. That's all I'm saying. And those are games I miss.
Auburn and Tennessee, not Georgia. You get Georgia and Tennessee every year.
Yeah. Auburn and Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't know. I would disagree with you guys on that. But, look, Alabama is not going to be this dominant for the rest of history or for the rest of the future. They're not.
Shut your mouth.
Alabama is going to regress back to the rest of the conference at some point in the future. And Tennessee is going to get better. This will be a game again at some point. It's not always going to be Alabama favored by 35.5. I mean, it's not always going to be that way.
All right. Take Daryl so we can move away from the scheduling conversation. Hey, Daryl, how are you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys?
Great.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to agree with Jim. I've actually been saying this for a while. I'm 45. I know there's going to be a lot of guys that are older than me that's going to disagree, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But I'm kind of tired of playing Tennessee every year. Not that I'm tired of playing Tennessee, but I would, now that the SEC has grown, there's more teams. Alabama doesn't play as many teams as I'd like to see from the East. I'd like to see them play Georgia more often, Florida more often. And with us playing Tennessee every single year, it just kind of, the only time we see Georgia is basically every 10 years, and if we see them in the SEC championship game, which is pretty often right now. But like you guys say, that, you know, we're not, Alabama's not going to be on top all the time, and Georgia's not going to be on top all the time. So I'd kind of like to see a more frequent rotation with Georgia, Florida, and the others.
Yeah, I will tell you, check back with me about week 4 of the 2020 season next season, and let me know. I'll let you know if I still want to play Georgia every year or not. All right, this is a 100% rock star topic. And I'm sure he didn't get it in the shower the other day, but he texted us and he said, hey, I'm thinking this is the end of the decade in college football this year. What is every SEC team's defining moment over this decade? So from the 2010 season to this moment in time we sit here right now, what is the defining moment for each SEC team? And I jotted a few down. If I said Florida and Tennessee hasn't had one, is that fair?
You can do bad ones, too.
No, I think...
I was thinking you could do bad, like, this is the defining moment. This
Florida's
higher.
Defining moment was Urban Meyer shutting it down.
Leaving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Urban Meyer doesn't leave. He was still really young. And, look, I know there was, you know, maybe a little bit of a down on that final year.
No, the question was always, can he do it without Tebow?
Right. Yeah. Well,
and he couldn't at Florida.
Tebow falls outside of this decade, so he can't go back to them.
But again, this is a guy that won a national championship against Alabama on the field at Ohio State. So if he wouldn't have left Florida, he had this thing dialed in. Say what you want about the characters of the players that were there. If Urban Meyer doesn't leave, Florida never has that down. I mean, they're not even close to being back right now at 6-1.
Yeah. I will tell you, I didn't think of any of the negatives. I was only looking for positives, and I couldn't find one for Florida, and I couldn't find one for Tennessee.
No, but I think the negatives and positives are both important because it shows you where these teams
are. There's no positive for Tennessee. I mean, maybe if you say in the last decade, give me the greatest positive moment of Tennessee football, do you know what I think it is? The Hail Mary win at Georgia.
That was a big one. That was a nice one.
I mean, can you think of one? Can you think of one beyond that, though?
It would have been, you know, we talked about the Terrence Cody block. You make that field goal, it would have been.
It's not technically in this decade, though. Once this decade finishes, that was 2009.
Yeah, that was 2009. This is 2010 on.
Yeah. Honest to goodness, I think it's the Hail Mary at Georgia.
For Auburn, it's easy. It's the national championship to start this decade, 2010.
But you know what's funny? And you're right about that. That should be the defining moment. The kick six play gets shown infinitely more than the kick to win the national championship.
It does. So maybe that's a better poll question, which is bigger this decade for Auburn.
I mean, that's a silly question, but I do think a lot of people would say the kick six.
Yep.
No, they would, Lance.
There's no way.
Oh, yeah. You don't think so?
No.
If
they would have gone on and beaten Florida State for that national championship, yes, because it's such an iconic play. It's against your rival. It knocks them out.
We'll
it
make
propels
that a,
you on.
Make that a Cowan Equipment poll question. We'll send it out here. For this decade, the most iconic moment for Auburn, is it the national championship or the kick six?
Now, I
don't think there's any way.
I know what you're saying. I think you're going to be surprised how many people say the kick six.
Okay. Defining moment, not iconic moment. We'll use Rockstar's terminology, defining moment there.
We're also going to get people that are not listening to the show that are going to say, I can't believe you'd ask this question.
You can be writing a copy there.
What? Don't say, I can't believe you asked this question?
No. Just put, hey, we were discussing defining moments.
I think they should listen to the show.
For Ole Miss, is it beating Alabama twice? That's it, right?
Yeah, and again, for Ole Miss, it could be a situation with Hugh Freeze leaving. I mean, Ole Miss was going to be relevant. You know, I don't think they were going to win championships.
Lance is right. I think the bad around the departure of Hugh Freeze outweighs the good.
Yeah,
I mean,
because Hugh Freeze was the guy that beat Alabama in back-to-back years.
But to the salacious nature of that story, And the fact that it came out of nowhere and happened right before a season started, you had to make a coaching change right before a season started.
Yeah, I think if you took a poll of college football fans and we did A or B, what was more significant in Ole Miss over the last decade? The fact that they beat Alabama in back-to-back regular seasons, which is incredible, or just everything surrounding the haze of that program with Hugh Freeze and the controversy?
Missouri's pretty easy. Two SEC East championships.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 2013, they were one of the best teams in the country. Mississippi State went to number one. That one's pretty easy,
That's
right?
That's pretty easy, too, yeah.
What would you do with Texas A&M?
Johnny Manziel that 1 year.
Manziel winning the Heisman.
I mean, look, that was the third best team in college football that year.
Yeah, Manziel winning the Heisman, beating Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I mean, how often do you see that one play recycled by CBS?
Double-digit wins just last year for Kentucky. Is there a chance LSU, and this gets it to modern times here, is there a chance LSU could be having their defining moment of the decade right now? Because right now it's the win in the game of the century and the SEC championship in 2011 before they end up losing.
Yeah, in 2011, people will forget that we were talking about LSU, maybe the greatest regular season team we've seen in college football history.
If they'd have beaten Alabama that night, they could have gone down as one of the greatest teams of all time.
I think we would have marked them as a top five team of all time. So I think right now that's their moment. But yeah, Dunaway, I mean, if Joe Burrow can continue this incredible role and they go on and they win a national championship, that's obviously going to be it.
Yeah, Alabama, so many different ones through this decade.
Oh, it's got to be second in 26, though.
Second in 26.
I think so. I think the Tua Tagovailoa, I mean, it's one of the greatest plays in college football history, and it won a national championship.
I think that was also George's moment.
It might be. I mean, I think Lance is right.
Really? Yeah. I mean, you get the sack on that. I mean, to put it at second in 26, I don't think anybody watching thought Georgia was going to lose that game at that moment.
Nope. I had Georgia as their semifinal overtime win over Oklahoma.
And that's probably it. I think most Georgia fans would prefer that be it. But
okay.
Oh, y'all done it now. You're complaining, whining and complaining. I smell the heat. The heat has come on in this studio.
I smell the heat,
It's a
too.
Terrible smell.
It's a terrible smell. But
that's what we get.
On.
That's what we get for you two pansies complaining about it being too cold.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Rockstar.
Brown's a tough one.
It smells like a burning Pop-Tart.
I've not said one word. I mean, it's cold in here, but I love it.
No, I've seen you over there with your arms crossed.
Well, I've had them crossed. I didn't complain, so we got the heat on. Stinky heat. The perfect game day tailgate without the expense and hassles of traveling to the stadium is at Avondale Brewing. You got to check out their new 30x17 LED wall presented by Renaissance Bank. Incredible for watching all the big games this fall. Get updates on Avondale Brewing social media channels as well as AvondaleBrewing.com. 35-17 was the Louisville Notre Dame score. It will not be that close.
Lewis is in Huntsville. Hey, Lewis, how you doing, man?
Hey, guys. Second and 26 for Alabama, no question. It's not even close. As many good memories. And I'm not an Auburn fan, but it's got to be the kick six, man. It's like one of you guys was saying, it's on every other day. And I was watching the ESPN thing on the TV. They had, like, the TV contract and the influence that it had on sports, and they showed great defining moments, and the last one they showed was second and 26, so... All right, guys, y'all have a good day.
I mean, it's really, I think of the last decade, and this is a big statement, and I'm probably forgetting one, Lance, or one of you will tell me, but if you look back at the last 10 years, that when we're in at the end of this decade, and you look back at the last decade, the two biggest plays of that decade are going to be the kick six and second and 26. I think those will be, like, if you do your plays of the decade, your top 10, those are your top 10 plays. Those are not one and two in whichever order you want to go in.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And I think right now if you did the top 10 most in the year, we talked about the Stanford, Cal, however you feel about that band and, you know, the chaos at the end of that game. If we did top 10 iconic all-time plays in college
those
football,
are in there.
Yeah, those two are already in there.
I mean, those plays are incredible. A walk-off touchdown for a national championship and then – one of the most absurd plays you've ever seen to win the biggest rivalry in the game?
Scott says defining is 2010. Iconic is kick six, using the English language to define it better, maybe. Ethan and Coleman is next. Hey, Ethan, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you.
Good. You know, defining moments, I'm going to throw a little bit of a what if, okay? So you got Florida, that 2012 team. Will Muschamp, they had a great defense. They finished 11-1 in the regular season. They got drilled by Louisville in the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But what if Notre Dame loses a game? Bama still beats Georgia. Bama plays Florida in the national championship in Miami. Even if we beat the dog out of Florida, how would that have defined Will Muschamp? Would we be thinking of him different than we do now?
Wow. That's a huge what-if game you just played there. But you're saying Will Muschamp was at the national championship game, so how we would feel differently about him because of that?
Correct.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you, Ethan. I guess we feel differently. He would have made it longer at Florida, I guess.
I mean, I guess Mark Helfrich not only went to a 14 playoff, but he actually played for a national championship.
Yep. In 2014 in the playoffs not long ago, and he was out the door pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, if I asked you right now, where is Mark Helfrich?
Where is Mark Helfrich? He's coaching somewhere.
I think he's with the Bears.
I think he's a Bears offensive analyst, if I had to guess. Right.
But I'm just saying, I don't think a lot of people would know where Mark Helfrich was, and his future looks so bright with that organization.
He's actually the offensive coordinator. I'm sure he analyzes a lot of things, Jim, but he is...
Analyzes bad quarterback play.
He is your Chicago Bears offensive coordinator.
Was he an analyst last year? Ascended to that role?
It doesn't appear. He's been the coordinator, according to the Wikipedia, since 2018. Did you do Arkansas?
Arkansas, we... did not mention anything positive. We mentioned Bobby Petrino in passing.
The only thing I would say, and that is your more defining moment because you had your program clicking, they had one of the most absurd plays in the history of college football, which might have been their positive, right? I mean, I know that 2011 season was really good.
You know what? That could be Ole Miss's. I mean, I know we go...
Oh, it kept them out of Atlanta.
Cup half full, cup half empty. But if we're going cup half empty for Ole Miss... You know, one thing was the Hugh Freeze scandal, but also that pitch from, who was the tight end? Hunter Henry.
Henry back to Alex Collins, yeah. Right?
See, I think we were getting confused there with the iconic moments and defining moments. What defines the program?
I think more defining might be that play because Ole Miss cannot get to Atlanta, and that play kept them out of Atlanta.
That would have got them there.
Yeah. That's not defining for Arkansas, but yes, for Ole Miss.
Arkansas was either laying down the motorcycle or the fact that regular season finale game against LSU. You win that game, there's a good chance you're playing for a national championship.
For Vandy, it's James Franklin. To show you what is possible with all their restrictions there. I mean, that's got to be something you hang your hat on if you're Vandy, saying, look what we can do.
Yeah, they've beaten Tennessee twice in a row, haven't they?
I think it's three.
Is it three times in a row? So, but these are down Tennessee teams. I don't know that any of those are going to resonate. You know, it's interesting, out of that whole Franklin run, is there a game that stands out to you guys?
Beating Georgia and Mark Richt, for some reason,
is that the one?
Is what pops out. I don't think that was a great Georgia team.
I mean, I remember when Auburn went up there, that was game day, right? I mean, you finally got game day to Vanderbilt. That was a big deal, and they won that game, but that wasn't a great Auburn team they beat.
No, there wasn't really a game that jumped out. I remember them completely destroying Houston in the Birmingham Bowl.
I mean, you would think... If that's your defining moment, that's pretty bad. But you would think that the greatest run in Vanderbilt football history would have a standout moment to you, but it really doesn't. It doesn't for me anyway. I don't think of just one moment. I remember James Franklin did it, but there isn't just one moment that stands out.
Just think of everything he did for that program, the anchor down that they – hashtag anchor down that is everything that they build their brand around now. That was a James Franklin creation.
Yeah.
The change of the helmet with the anchor involved in that. So much of what they will do for decades to come was started with James Franklin. Like, he really defined a lot of that program.
He did. Now, they've lost all that steam. I mean, whatever steam he had built in there, they've lost every single bit of it. They're back to being, at least this year anyway, as bad as Vanderbilt used to be when we were growing up.
Keep those defining moments coming in on Twitter, at Jocks Roundtable. We appreciate those. Rolling in so much. The coaching decisions, something we talked about yesterday with Ed Orgeron instead of Tom Herman and Jimbo Fisher, and Orgeron now seems to be having more success than those other two. And it got me looking at another big decision that was made. Scott Frost is now 4-3 at Nebraska, 8-11 since he got to Lincoln. So far, he's been a flat line. You got to pass the first year with 4 wins. Now he's 4-3 in year 2, and the expectations were through the roof. Where are you on Scott Frost and the job he's done at Nebraska right now, and where do you think he can go?
Well, if you guys want to do kind of the study we did yesterday with the SEC, if we wanted to quickly go through conferences, I would have Nebraska a D this year.
Yeah.
I really would.
I mean, 4-3, but very disappointing.
And this is a bad time for him to ask this question, Jim, because they're coming off a 34-7 loss at Minnesota. I mean, they were not even competitive with Minnesota, who's a good team this year. I get it. But if I'm a Nebraska fan, I would like to think Scott Frost, Lance, could have me where P.J. Fleck has Minnesota, and he doesn't.
Yeah, I know a couple of Nebraska fans locally really well, and talking to them before the season, you know, they were so optimistic it was going to be 10-2. The only losses they really saw on the schedule were Ohio State and Wisconsin.
They probably got two more coming, Wisconsin and Iowa.
Look, this is a team right now. I mean, Purdue's not healthy.
Yeah, Indiana and Purdue are so bad.
But they could lose to Maryland on the
road. They could lose their last three. But I feel very confident they've got two more, Jim, so that's a 7-5.
So can you imagine just getting bowl eligible in year two?
Yeah, 6-6 or 7-5. Still a big improvement over what they did last year, but it seems like he's very flat right now in Lincoln.
I agree.
So not all these hires that are supposed to be these super hires are really going to work out or are working out.
Well, is this year three for Fleck or year two for Fleck at Minnesota?
Year three.
Is it year three? So I guess it's unfair to compare him, but that I was thinking about that. You know, I flipped over and watched some of that game Saturday, and I was just thinking about how P.J. Fleck has got Minnesota in such a better spot right now than Scott Frost has Nebraska. But I guess it's unfair to compare them since he's a year ahead.
A lot of that was built on Adrian Martinez having a Heisman-like year, and he is not.
No, Adrian Martinez is not playing good football. And, you know, you go back to the final six games of last year, you know, where they went 4-2, and those two losses were, you know, by a combined 5 points. And, it looked like Adrian Martinez, which was one of the highest – recruited players in the history of Nebraska football, he looked the part of a guy that maybe one day could be a Heisman finalist. You look at him now, he's only completing 60% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He just hasn't been good.
And while you guys are the greatest listening audience in the world, Royal Payne with a great comparison. He says Nebraska and Tennessee are about the same programs right now. If Nebraska was still in their conferences they're supposed to be in, the Big 12, Oklahoma would be bashing their head in like Alabama's bashing Tennessee's head in now, and it would be a bigger story.
Yeah, it wouldn't be much better. I mean, they wouldn't be any better in the Big 12 than they are in the Big 10.
They'd be worse off.
Probably so.
They'd be getting their eyes beat out every year by Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Interact with us on Twitter @JocksRoundtable.